Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. It's Thursday morning here on KSJE, and it is time to talk about this weekend's Symphony Weekend in Durango and Farmington. Thomas Heuser is here in the studio for the first time in a long time to talk about the symphony this weekend. Thomas, welcome back in person to KSJE.
Thank you for having me, Scott. It is so good to be back here in the studio with you.
Right, which means you're in Farmington and you're traveling around and visiting with folks today, and so it's all good.
It is good. You know, right? I mean, we're still in a pandemic, but we're happy to be reopening and getting back to something like a normal setup here.
Right, right. The symphony had its first concert of the season last month, of course,
yes.
And so first in-person event in the concert hall in both Durango and Farmington. So this weekend is concert number two.
Concert number two of our 36th season. We're calling it Sound of Resilience. Obviously, that's a really wonderful theme for this year because
we do
feel like we've learned a lot, but we are resurrecting ourselves from this trying year. And the first concert with in-person audiences was as wonderful as could be expected, just to have that energy of the audiences back.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Smaller orchestra, of course, due to safety and other reasons, but still, I think, very energetic, very enthusiastic, and I think they were excited to be back on stage, just like the audience was excited to be back listening to them in person.
It certainly felt that way. I think the musicians are so thrilled to be back on stage together. It really felt like something of a family reunion. And, you know, the orchestra is a little smaller, as you mentioned, so we can create a little better distancing. And we weren't entirely sure how the budget was going to pan out and that kind of thing. But we are just excited to be performing again and as a full symphony orchestra. It is a full band.
Right.
Yeah.
True. And it sounds like it, full band.
I mean, it does. It
definitely fills the hall.
Exactly.
For
that
sure.
Full, rich sound of the symphony. It's wonderful to have it back in our lives again.
Exactly. So, and I want to talk about this weekend's concerts, but I also want to remind folks that there is an online option still for folks who maybe don't feel comfortable coming back to the concert hall or live outside of the Four Corners area but still have become fans of the symphony over the last 18 months.
That's exactly right. So we have a bigger audience than ever now, technically, because we're in all states, all countries. We're around the world at the San Juan Symphony thanks to the online streaming option. And again, that's one of the silver linings of this last year, is that we learned how to do it and what's the best way to put ourselves forward online. So we do have the streaming concert from Saturday night available then live, but also for a two-week period after the concert for viewing on demand. So lots of options to get in touch with the symphony.
There you go. Very, very good. And so talk about the lineup for this weekend of what you've got planned, because this is a concert called Romantic Atmospheres.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Romantic Atmospheres. There's so much to unpack here, but it's three works from the Romantic era that are all shedding light on this phenomenon of Romantic music in a different way. And we've talked a lot in my lectures, and there'll be another online lecture this week for folks to view that unpacks this term to even greater detail. But Romantic music, of course, followed Romantic literature. And Romantic literature was very focused on the characters, their personalities, their inner lives, their psychologies and emotions, and also very evocative and depictive of the place and the time and the setting. So with all of that, these three pieces take that question of what is a romantic piece of music in a different direction. So we have on the concert the music of Louise Farenc, a French woman composer who's not very well known, but really should be, one of the archetypal romantics, and we'll talk a little bit about her. We have also the music of Alexander Borodin, one of the great mighty five of the Russian nationalist romantic composer group, and the unfinished symphony of Franz Schubert, which I know is an audience favorite. So we're getting these three different takes on romanticism from three 19th century composers. Should be beautiful, familiar music for people to get excited about.
Very, very interesting. And you say familiar music, and yet I don't know, maybe some of these folks aren't very familiar with, right? At least two of these composers. I was not, but that's just me.
Oh, and you are a very well-versed music
I don't know
lover.
About that, but I try.
That's the beauty of the symphony, of course, is that we have this opportunity to both delve into what we love and know, and also to expand the palette a little bit. So yeah, I would say Louise Farenc is probably the least well-known of these composers. She was born in 1804 in Paris, grew up in a very prestigious sort of artist commune environment, and had great training early on. As a 15-year-old, she was already at the Paris Conservatory and made an incredible name for herself as a performer. In the 1840s, she was made a professor at the Paris Conservatory, and actually was the first female instrumental instructor to be named a professor there, and actually the first woman to gain equal pay for her work at the conservatory. In the 19th century, this was a big deal.
I was going to say.
Paid equal pay as her male counterparts. So go
Even
Louise.
To have a woman with a career or some type of job outside the home seemed like it was very innovative.
It's true. And, you know, there are other wonderful examples from the era. She was at the same generation as Clara Wieck Schumann, Robert Schumann's wife, who was also a piano virtuoso. So there was a niche, but it was very, very seldom pursued, as you mentioned. So Louise Farenc is very important historically in that way as a pioneering woman composer, but her music is not performed very often. It's rich. It's very, very harmonically rich and melodically rich, and there's a lot of it. There's quite a bit of chamber music that was the most famous in her lifetime, as well as works for the symphony orchestra. That's two overtures and three symphonies, and a huge body of piano music, because, again, she was the piano professor. There are etudes, sonatas, just quite a lot of beautiful music. And, again, not all of it performed or even recorded, so some of it is still being discovered, as is the case of this overture number one that we will play this weekend. We are excited to have this dark and brooding overture by Louise Farenc to get us started. You know, one of the ways that romantic composers manifested this idea of the inner strife of the protagonist and the individual was to get into the darker side of human emotion. And I think Louise Farenc in this overture does that beautifully in a way that harkens to some of her contemporaries like Felix Mendelssohn and even Franz Schubert in a way. It's a very Schubertian style. Very rhythmical, very exciting, but in that dark minor key to give this sort of agitated sense of forward motion and emotion. So we love playing something that audiences maybe haven't heard, but that it's still is relatable and is something that sounds like the kind of music that we're used to at the symphony.
Right, and follows this theme that you've got of these romantic atmospheres, right?
Yeah, I think the atmosphere for her is a little, it's the agitated, it's the sentimental and the brooding. And so that gets to, you know, what opera overture traditions tend to be, which is setting the mood, right? So this one is very much the mood painting, the sort of attitude piece that we have on to get us started here with this Romantic Atmospheres concert.
Got you. Yeah. Very interesting. My guest this morning, Thomas Heuser, is here. He is the music director, of course, of the San Juan Symphony, back in concert this weekend in person. Mm-hmm. Again, it is in Durango on Saturday night and in Farmington on Sunday afternoon, so 7:30 p.m., Community Concert Hall at Fort Lewis College on the 13th. Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. here at the Henderson Performance Hall in Farmington on November the 14th.
That's right. And just to reiterate, the Saturday night concert will be broadcast live.
Right.
And anyone who purchases an in-person ticket also gets that live stream. In the event that they want to watch it later or they end up not feeling good on the day, they can stay home and still see.
There you go. Or if you're listening or watching us from outside of the local area and cannot just drive over to Farmington or Durango this weekend, you can watch it in the comfort of your own home this weekend or for the next, what, seven
two
days?
Weeks.
Two
yeah,
weeks. Oh, pardon
two
me, 14
weeks.
Days.
Yep.
I should know that because I'm on the board, which I always like to remind people that I serve on the board of the San Juan Symphony, and so I should know some of these things.
We are grateful for that, Scott.
Well, I am grateful to still be on the board and be able to contribute in some small way, so thank you for that. Talk to me about the other composer that you have who maybe is not as well known as the final composer.
That's right. So Alexander Borodin is one of the so-called Mighty Five, the Russian Mighty Five, the Mighty Handful. There's a number of translations, but these five composers were really 19th century trendsetters who wanted their music to be relatable to common Russian themes, folklore, folk tunes, hymns, this kind of music that was very much widely heard and widely appreciated in Russian culture. And the idea for them was to get away from what other romantic composers of the time, like Robert Schumann, were doing, which was to get away from these formal symphonies and sonatas and write music that they called programmatic. Now, this was the great debate in the 19th century romantic era. Is my piece a symphony, or is it a romantic tone poem? And the tone poem, or the tone picture, tone painting, all of these works for the orchestra were designed to tell a story, or paint a picture, or set a scene. And Borodin and the other Russian composers like him were fixated on that and made it really their goal to write music that was approachable and could be understood as having this, quote, program that said something outside of itself. Now, Borodin, it should be mentioned, did a number of wonderful works in that style, in particular this tone poem called In the Steppes of Central Asia that we'll be hearing this weekend. But he also wrote symphonies. He also wrote chamber music, like string quartets. So he was kind of straddling the line. And not only that, in his lifetime, he was not known as a composer so much as a chemist. Borodin was trained as a chemist and had a career developing different compounds and publishing like 20-some papers on this sort of these chemistry procedures and things. So a very interesting guy who had music as a hobby, sort of.
The 19th century side hustle, what you're telling us. Yes.
Music being the side hustle. The career was the chemist. Yeah, that's right. So very fascinating individual, and was sort of the last one to join this group of Russian composers, headed up by Liadov and Mussorgsky and Rimsky-Korsakov. These are all names that are big in the Russian tradition. So
definitely.
So Borodin writes this tone poem in the steppes of Central Asia. You can imagine this is the great plateau that stretches across much of Russia and even China, below the Himalayas. And so it's vast landscapes, very wide open, and that openness in the picture is what Borodin is doing here. And this is the other real romantic atmosphere goal for composers, is to set the scene, really create a sense of place, and to have there be this sort of sweeping a landscape, for lack of a better word. And that's where we are. We're on the steppes of Central Asia. And I think for our listeners in the Four Corners, there's a lot of parallels to Utah, Nevada, here in New Mexico.
We have a lot of open spaces here in the West, for sure.
Big sort of cliffs and structures and lots of wide openness. You can hear the breeze really gets this piece started. And then it has a simple central melody that repeats from the English horn to the strings and across. And again, it's a very simple folk-like melody so that it could be easily relatable to audiences at the time.
Right. Very interesting. And again, I don't want to compare these great composers to maybe modern day, but I would think some of the music we could compare it to would be maybe music we hear in movies and things like that, when the scenes are shifting or things, to give us that imagery and kind of match the scenes we see on screen.
Yes, absolutely. This really is the kind of thing you would see in a film now, you know, where you want to have the music in the picture very synced up. You're exactly right. And so I think not all of his music does this, but this is a great example of one of these tone pictures for orchestra.
Very interesting. Very good. All right. And last but certainly not least, we should talk about the final composer in this concert this weekend.
Yes, Franz Schubert's Unfinished Symphony. This symphony was actually one of the reasons why I went into conducting. I've always had a special place for the Unfinished Symphony, as I know many performers do. It is very powerful, very emotional, and unique in the field because it is quote-unquote unfinished. Now, this issue of its being finished or unfinished has a lot of debate. He has 9 symphonies proper, and the 9th was one of the longest at the time, and it followed this piece. So the question is, why did he have a short 2-movement symphony, whereas they're typically 3 or 4 movements? Why is this piece structured the way that it is? And we could sit here and talk about that all day, but the important takeaway is that it does stand the test of time as a standalone 2-movement symphony. Relatively short, only about 20 minutes long, but filled with incredible tension, incredible melodies, and a beautiful sort of sweep of emotions from beginning to end. So this, to me, it is a symphony that Schubert was doing what a tone poem was trying to do as well, where it's shorter, it's more concise, not as much development and drawing out of the themes, more just to sort of paint an emotional picture and give a short sort of brief sense of what is going on psychologically in the character. You really can hear in this music a sense of psychology, a sense of personality of either the composer or the protagonist or whatever you see and hear in this music, I think it comes across as very personal. So there again, we have this romantic artist in the form of Franz Schubert, who himself was kind of the archetypal protagonist. He was sort of sickly in his lifetime, had an incredibly prolific career as a writer of songs, setting the text of Goethe. He wrote more than 600 individual songs in a lifetime where he only lived to be about 30 years old, died of syphilis very young. So this incredible outpouring of music from this genius composer, and we have this two-movement symphony, very, very well known and beloved. And the question is, why is it two movements? It's a fun psychological experiment.
Interesting. We have a little sample that we can listen to, so we'll hear a little bit of Schubert's unfinished Eighth Symphony. A little sample there of Franz Schubert's great unfinished symphony. It is one of the selections that we'll be hearing this weekend at the San Juan Symphony Concert in both Durango and Farmington. Thomas Hoyser, the music director of the symphony, is my guest here on the radio, back in studio, which we're so excited about. So again, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thanks
and
for
so
having me.
You were, I mean, we heard some of that great brooding Schubert composition there, and as we were talking during that piece, you know, he died very young.
That's right. Yeah. Only lived to be about 31, 32 years
right.
old. It's very tragic. And, you know, the amount of music that he was able to produce in his short life is really what blows me away about Schubert. I mean, you can look at these nine symphonies. You can look at the sets of songs, the chamber music, all of it extremely well-crafted and profound. Some of the piano sonatas are truly unbelievable. Schumann spoke of his heavenly length. And I think you hear... Now, that's a contrast to the unfinished symphony, the
right.
heavenly shortness, very
right.
brief. But there's something about the way that he's able to spin off these melodies, even in the instrumental music, like the unfinished symphony, you can tell he's a wonderful lyricist. And that was part of his training, was as a singer, as a young person, was apparently well lauded as a singer, studied music with Antonio Salieri, the great Viennese composer. So... A great background, but an all too short life.
Right. And he lived early in this period that we are talking about, that you are talking about. I'm just nodding my head agreeing
yeah.
with you. But this Romantic era, right? Because he kind of straddles the classical era and the Romantic era, as you told me.
Exactly right. Yeah. So 1797 is when he's born. And so in that short life, he really is a part of that transformation between the classical aesthetic and the Romantic. And he's one of the composers who really tries to delve into the depths of the human condition, the psychology that we're talking about, and as others were as well. Beethoven, you know, other composers of the time, really did try to make more out of the music than just the notes. And so when we're listening to Schubert, I think especially the Unfinished Symphony, there is just a palpable sense of character and mood, and really a very often dark mood. You know, we were just getting to, in that beautiful Bernstein recording, the moment where the opening introduction music returns, and it just seems to sink deeper and deeper and deeper into this dark emotional place. It's very profound, and there's a lot of energy on the part of the orchestra to make that happen, to make it come across for the audiences. But even if you had a robot playing it, it still has this power, just an incredible power to move. And I think that's the beauty of Schubert's music.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And so all these three pieces together on the concert this weekend, we've seen the first concert was somewhat shorter, maybe with no intermission. Is that the plan for this weekend as well?
It is. That's still our format for this. At this point, you
yes.
know, I think we'll get back to the socializing and intermission and all of those things that we also love about the symphony.
Right.
We'll get there.
Sure.
I think we're just still in this transition period, and we appreciate everybody's patience with that because we know it's not the usual symphony setup. But yes, these three works are relatively short, and in about an hour's time, you'll get this wonderful view of Romanticism from these three different perspectives. And again, I think that that provides a wonderful cohesiveness to our concerts, and we'll send people out the door without unnecessary gatherings in the restrooms and things like that, as we're still grappling with this pandemic.
Right. So. There you go. And the other two, we were talking too during the piece that both of us seem to think that this is the first time that maybe the San Juan Symphony has performed a Ferenc piece or a Borodin piece.
I think so. I mean, I think Borodin's slightly more well-known, most certainly the first time for Louise Ferenc. So that's a wonderful feature. Again, we're trying to always mix it up, and I think that's,
right.
that makes it pretty exciting.
Right, very yeah. true. Well, and we thank you for bringing that to us and the musicians, I think, too, to make them maybe challenged as to playing these different pieces and to add it to their repertoires as well.
Absolutely. And we had, for example, the last concert, Beethoven next to Adolphus Hale Stork. It's probably the first time some of our musicians have had a chance to play that and audiences to hear it. It helps. You know, it helps us not just broaden our perspective, but also further our appreciation for the composers that make up the canon of the repertoire. So it's so important to have that diversity. And Louise Ferenc, I mean, there's more music to explore yet. Again, three great symphonies. I just performed the second symphony with my orchestra in Idaho Falls. Just loving it. I'm really loving her music right now and excited to share it.
Very exciting. And I would say for folks who are listening and watching us this morning, Thomas is like, well, it's the San Juan Symphony. It's classical music. I've heard all the classical music there is to hear. The answer would be no, you haven't, and it hasn't been performed yet either locally.
Right. Yeah.
And here's more opportunities to maybe find a piece that you love or your new favorite piece of classical music. music or whatever the case may be.
Right, and I think that that's what's so fun, is that we always have a chance to welcome not just new composers, but new audiences. And I would always advocate for people coming and giving the San Juan Symphony a try, because it really gives us an opportunity to branch out into the community, meet more folks who may not have experienced a symphony before. I always say it's babysitter worthy. For those of you who have young people at home who would like to make a night on the town, the symphony is the place to do that. And it's always, in my mind, important to program music that will be well-received, well-liked, and have that emotional content that will connect with people. So while it is off the beaten path oftentimes, there's still, for me, the emotional and the human connection that we're striving to get at the orchestra. So.
Very, very true. And as much as I love the term babysitter-worthy, now with the online option, you don't even need to pay for a babysitter. You
Hello.
Can actually put the kids to bed and watch the concert.
Hello, I didn't even think of that. All right.
Right?
Well, that's perfect. So then you have no excuse.
Right, there you
and,
go.
You know, the beautiful thing, too, is that the online option is very affordable. It's for your entire household. You could actually introduce young people to this music and to the orchestra through the online options. So that's a great point, Scott, and I think we'll get some families online thanks to that.
Look, I hope so.
Yeah.
Again, sanjuansymphony.org is the website to go for more information. If you want to buy a ticket to get that online, that streaming option, it comes with every ticket, correct? So
right.
You have both.
Yeah, so you can, if you buy the in-person option, then you get that online stream, and you can also buy the online tickets individually.
Got it.
So that's a really nice feature. And also on our website is, again, information about the rest of the season, as well as the links to online lectures, program notes. Again, a lot of things have just moved onto our website now, so make sure you get on there and check it all out.
Right, because as much as you, I love having you here talking about the music and the stories behind the music and the composers, you do another kind of pre-concert talk. Of course, you'll do that again in Durango this week, and again in Farmington right before the concert, right? You're still
That's
planning
right.
to do that.
That's right, yeah. So we have a musically speaking lecture series, and that'll be online. Again, we've just sort of moved that online. It's part of the new normal. And then here in Farmington, we are continuing the tradition of having a 1 hour before the concert preview, just a short preview where I get a chance to say hello to audiences. It was so nice to have our first one back after 20 months this last concert go around, and we'll be doing that again this time. So wonderful opportunity. Just come an hour ahead of the concert to Henderson Hall Performing Arts Center here at San Juan College, and we'll see you in one of the side rooms for that pre-concert lecture.
There you go. 2 p.m. then on Sunday, November 14th, in the 9,000 rooms here at the Henderson Performance Hall for that pre-concert talk, and getting kind of the inside scoop from the one and only Thomas Heuser about the music we're about to hear at the concert. And then the concert will be at 3 p.m. on Sunday the 14th, or of course Saturday evening the 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Community Concert Hall at Fort Lewis College in Durango. It is the San Juan Symphony. And just have a couple minutes remaining this morning, Thomas, so look ahead at the rest of the season, if you can do it quickly.
All right.
I don't know how much time I left you. Not enough, I know. But,
well, I'll bash through it.
What do you
quickly.
Got? Yes,
again,
sir.
We've got it all up online at sanjuansymphony.org. Our concert in February is called Perpetual Motion. We're going to be welcoming violin soloist Karen Kim for the Samuel Barber Violin Concerto, as well as two other 20th century composers, Florence Price and Albert Rousseau. So a real wonderful look at 20th century music on the February program. We're ending the season in April with the music of Tchaikovsky and a world premiere by composer James Stevenson. So much to look forward to.
Very exciting. And I know there are still plans for a family concert that got moved from October, hopefully to the spring.
That's right. We're excited that vaccinations for young people taking off. We,
right.
of course, are advocating for vaccines, boosters, regular testings for the community to get us out of this pandemic. And hopefully that youth concert being moved to May will be an opportunity to play Carnival of the Animals for audiences of all ages at the San Juan Symphony.
Wonderful. Another great reason to support the symphony. Thomas, it's always great to have you on the program. Even better to have you here in person. Thank
Agreed.
You for making the trip down, and we'll see you at the concert hall.
Oh, I can't wait, and thanks, Scott, for having me.
You bet. You bet. Great to have you here. Thomas Heuser and the San Juan Symphony in concert this weekend. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.